This episode of the Missed Spots podcast is brought to you by Amazon Prime, the amazing service from Amazon that allows you to get free two-day shipping on nearly every item available on their website, plus access to Amazon Prime Music and Prime Video service with tons of movies and TV shows, including the acclaimed original series Transparent, starring Jeffrey Tambor. Now you can get a free three-month trial of Amazon Prime by going to missbots.com/prime. Plus, if you do that, Amazon's going to throw in a free three-month trial of HBO on your Prime Video. Nothing else you have to say or do. You get that for free with this trial as well. That way you can catch up on Game of Thrones, Westworld, or you can watch anything from HBO's amazing back catalog, like The Sopranos, The Wire. It's all there for you. After your trial, you can pay just $99 for the entire year of Prime. Trust me, that sounds like a lot, but as a Prime member myself, that money more than pays for itself in just two-day shipping after just a couple of months. So head over to missbots.com/prime. right now and try Amazon Prime for free for 3 months and join what practically everyone should be a part of, Amazon Prime. Hey, Kevin, I have a joke for you.
What is it, Mike?
Elias in a segment with the Lucha House Party. Hilarious one-liners like this and much more on the Missed Spots podcast.
Time to play the game.
Right, welcome back, everybody, to this episode, the go-home episode to Elimination Chamber 2019, or as they call it in Germany, No Escape. So we got to talk about Raw, we got to talk about SmackDown Live, and then we're going to give our predictions for Elimination Chamber. I'm off to a bad start, as we talked about after Royal Rumble, but that's par for the course for me, right, Kev?
Yeah, you come on strong late in the year all the time, and listen, this is not a competition, Mike. Other than the fact that I always win, this is not a competition. Just keep that in mind when you're making your predictions.
I will. It's not a competition. But it is a competition.
It's not a competition, but I'm better than you. Let's talk about Raw. So Raw opened up with a unreasonably angry Becky Lynch. And the reason I say that is that she has attacked two of her bosses. And really for no real reason. She was paranoid that they would take her title shot away. And because she was paranoid about that.
No good reason to be paranoid about that.
Well, no. It's a good reason about the paranoia, but the response to that paranoia is not punch your boss. If I'm worried
I
that my...
I beg to differ. I think that that's worked out a few times in history.
I'm sure it has, once or twice. I don't like this. I think it's no surprise to anyone listening here, and no surprise to you, Mike, that I don't think Becky Lynch needs an authority figure to get over.
Not at all.
This is the easiest story to tell in the world. Ronda Rousey is a heel that the crowd is supposed to love. She turns on the crowd. She's vicious. She's an ex-MMA fighter. Becky Lynch is kind of a scrappy underdog in this. It happens to be one of the baddest human beings in the company and the most over person on the roster. This is just the easiest story to tell, and they cannot get out of their own way. The entire thing that was built about this episode was, is Becky Lynch going to apologize to Triple H and Stephanie? What we end up getting is her, yes, apologizing, which makes her look bad in the eyes of the audience. And you could tell just by the response when she did it, only to pull the rug out anyway with the Charlotte Flair deal. Listen, Charlotte Flair is an incredible athlete and someone that we are very high on. But you do not need Charlotte Flair in this match at WrestleMania to sell it. It is such a better match with a one-on-one storyline than what they're pitching to us, especially with Vince McMahon now backing Charlotte Flair. We have the evil Mr. McMahon versus Becky Lynch storyline. I know what they're doing. They're saying Becky Lynch is the female Stone Cold. Just let Becky Lynch be the Becky Lynch, you know, and stop trying to rehash storylines from 25 years ago.
This is like they're trying to pin her as Stone Cold. They're trying to, I don't know, maybe they're going to put a McMahon in every corner a la WrestleMania 2000 or something here. It's all unnecessary. Like we've talked about this ad nauseum on the show. Becky Lynch is in like Flint when it comes to this crowd, and they love her. They dislike Rhonda. You're having it right itself right in front of you. Take the easy way out on this. WWE likes to take the easy way out on things because they like to rebook rematches for pay-per-views the night after all the time. So we know it's in their MO. Just do it that way. But no, that's not what we're going to get. We were waiting to see how they were going to shoehorn Charlotte in here because it's been the rumor for so long. Yet there is a champion in the women's division on SmackDown who has nothing to do right now.
Wasn't even featured on TV, yeah.
I don't think she was last week either.
This could be Charlotte going against Asuka again in a rematch. We could have had Charlotte go up against Asuka and either win or lose. There's a lot of storylines coming out of both of them. You still could have had Charlotte be the first challenger again to Becky after she beats Ronda Rousey, which would have been a great storyline coming out of WrestleMania. But no, they have to go and shoehorn as many people into matches as possible. Listen, good for Charlotte Flair. I'm glad that she has a match. She deserves it. But the storyline is better without her, and the storyline is better without Becky Lynch fighting McMahons. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. What is usually a pointless women's tag match with a bunch of teams that are fighting in the Elimination Chamber coming up on Sunday happened, but they did something really good, Mike. They made whoever took the pinfall have to be one of the first two teams to enter the match.
Hey, stipulations.
Stipulations and stakes. There's a reason for the match to happen. That's all I ever ask. I don't necessarily need to see these teams go at it, but because there was a stipulation in that match, one and two different matches on SmackDown, it made it make sense. So I'm for this. This is the way it needs to be done if they're going to do it this way.
Yeah, I mean, it's story writing 101, really. Make everything mean something. So.
Yeah. I have a really tough question to ask you, Mike. Is Drew McIntyre just another guy?
Oh, God, it's starting to feel like it, and that's a fucking shame. And you know what? I saw a lot of people mentioning this on Twitter, and I feel like we're able to almost pinpoint the point of when this happened to the loss to Dolph Ziggler. It's just after that was his first pinfall loss. It's been kind of downhill from there.
Well, the second you give him that first one, then it doesn't matter what happens afterwards, right? Then they can just heat him back up. They always
wins and losses don't matter anyway, right?
Right. Yeah, so once the storyline of being undefeated is over, then he can be a 50-50 guy. Then he can put other people over on a regular basis. And he can be in pointless six-man tag matches that mean nothing. And by the way, when you have a pointless six-man tag match that comes out of another match and is overbooked just to get guys on the show, don't have bullshit foot-on-the-ropes nonsense with the ref coming out. We have matches in for the world title where someone cheats and uses leverage and advantage, and no one comes out of the back to right the wrong. You're telling me it's the random episode of Raw with a match that no one gives a shit about, that the ref's going to come down and make sure that everything's on the up and up? Yeah, go fuck yourself. If this match meant anything, maybe, but not in this context and not with these people that none of this is building to anything. None of these people have any matches coming up on Elimination Chamber. It was just another thing to do.
Well, some of them do now. Braun and Baron are officially in a match.
Oh, are they?
You know, we want to see that.
Oh, but the people are clamoring for it, Mike.
These two matches that pretty much ran together took up 45 minutes of the entire show. Like,
that's
almost a third of all of Monday Night Raw was revolving around Finn Balor, Braun Strowman, Kurt Angle, Baron Corbin, Drew McIntyre, and Bob Lash. Like, there's some of those people who I absolutely want to take up a good chunk of Monday Night Raw from week to week. But when you put them with those other people and you make it just mean nothing, I don't want to see it. And a lot of people didn't want to see it.
And by the way, I was wrong also. You've got Finn and Bob Lash going at it at Elimination
Chamber,
correct?
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah.
So you do have a match there, which I was kind of getting behind. Yeah, I was kind of getting behind this feud. And this was a total non-starter for me to have this all go down that way in a kind of pointless segment where they could have featured somebody else. We've had Mojo Rawley for 2 weeks in a row talking to himself in the mirror. I know you're not a huge fan of this. I think it could go somewhere. You know what? How about not doing this match and putting him in a match? And let's start seeing what this new character is. How about you expose somebody else instead of these pointless matches that go nowhere and that mean absolutely nothing?
Yeah.
I digress. The Seth and Paul Heyman promo was very run-of-the-mill for me until the very end, when I thought that Seth Rollins did what he does from time to time, which is speak as himself and kind of, you know what he did in this promo that I just realized? He lowered his tone. He talked directly at Paul Heyman, didn't worry about looking at the hard camera, and delivered some very straightforward, passionate, but subtle lines about what he was going to do to win that championship. And I was impressed by that. That's a good Seth Rollins to me. And it was very, very simple, very straightforward. It reminded me a little bit of Jake Roberts, you know, where you don't have to yell over the other person.
I was just about to say the same thing.
Make them listen to you, and Seth has the ability to do that. And I was very impressed by it. Up until that point, though, it was kind of a paint-by-numbers thing. He's better when he does that. That's the kind of thing that you think that the people in the back would be watching and kind of getting a feel and going, Seth, lean more towards this guy. Let's be this person a little more in promos because it can really help get you over.
You know, like some of the best actors in the history of the game, they don't just yell all the time. They control tone and situation about what is going on in the scene. And I feel like WWE all too often wants people to just go out there and yell. That makes you more intense. Like, you can be intense through calm, collected thought.
Well, you know what it came off of to me, Mike, was that Paul is the braggadocious blowhard. He is the advocate. He's bringing it up a level and selling it. And when he's saying it's not a prediction, it's a spoiler, it's sales, it's flash. And when Seth said it, it was just true. It was just him saying how things are going to be and the way he sees it. And that means a lot. It means a lot to the fans, and it comes across in that promo.
And using Jake Roberts as the example, I feel like that's the ultimate example because he was just so calculating in every word that came out of his mouth all the time. And you hung on it and you believed it. Even if you didn't want to, even when he was the heel and he said he was going to do something, you kind of felt like he was going to, even if you didn't want him to, because he was going against the guy that you liked. But yeah, need to utilize that more, because Seth can do that. And he showed that there. He's shown it on a few other random occasions. Seeing fired up Seth during a match is always fun, because Seth can just do that, but he doesn't need to be super fired up all the time on the mic.
And what happens is, when he is fired up on the mic, it'll be different and you'll understand it. So yes, there needs to be levels of characters, and that's the great thing about it. Mike, I have a very important question to ask you.
Okay.
Dean Ambrose, what up with that?
I don't know. Like, well, let me, I hate to answer a question with another question. Do you believe that he is really leaving, or do you think that it's a work?
I don't know. I and honestly, I don't really care.
I'm of the I don't know. I care, because I do like Dean Ambrose, the person who plays these characters.
Well, I'm not saying that to be nasty towards Dean Ambrose. I don't care, because I think if it is a work, I don't get it. And I don't think it's particularly clever, especially that they haven't really mentioned it on TV or anything. Like, I don't know. I don't find it particularly interesting.
It is weird that they did mention it, though, on their website.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I know it's weird, but I just don't find it particularly interesting, I guess, what it is. Because since they announced it, or since we've heard that he was leaving, they've had him in a 2-week feud with Nia Jax, which is apparently over now. They've decided that they're not going to go forward with it. So, yeah, it does sound like he's going, because...
And now he's in a 2-week feud with EC3.
With trading roll-up, small package victories, who cares, yawn. He's telling Seth Rollins to go beat Brock Lesnar. These guys hate each other. Why is he turning babyface? EC3 is a heel. He is a 100% heel, yeah. And he's feuding with Dean Ambrose. And not only that, I want to know who EC3 is. I'm not of the opinion that I hate the fact that he hasn't really talked. I'm fine with that. But his video package, or something about him, has to start telling a story.
His video package really leaves a lot to be desired. There isn't a whole lot that explains it. Like, I've been told, like, even if I didn't watch some of NXT with him, I'm being told he's the top 1% of entertainment. What does that mean?
I don't know.
You know, who are, like, the people who are the top 1% of entertainment talk a lot and are seen a lot and are talked about a lot. I don't understand. Like, it was even kind of funny. Like, people were joking about, like, EC3 is actually a stripper, because he came home and just took off all his clothes and his ring gear was underneath it. Like, that's not good. That's not what we should be thinking about. You should be able to give us some defined character traits about this guy.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I just don't know what's going on with Dean Ambrose. It's. I think that EC3 and Dean Ambrose could have a good feud. I think it could be a good thing for Dean to put him over at WrestleMania if he's on his way out. I'm fine with all of that, but trading small package roll-up victories to consecutive Raws, that is not building to a WrestleMania match. That's building to a nothing feud that's 50-50 booking, and no one wants to see that. No one does. Literally no one wants to see that, yet they keep giving it to us on a weekly basis. Something happened, Michael.
Is it the thing that really that we were both good. Really excited about?
Something really good happened. The Revival are the tag team champions.
Yeah.
Mind blown.
It was a good match, too.
Okay, so this is what I have to say about this match. This crowd could not have given a shit less.
Yeah.
About 75 to 85% of this match.
Yeah.
They finally started to wake up a little bit near the end with a ton of amazing false finishes. This was an excellent match, wrestled well by both Bob Roode and Chad Gable and The Revival. They finally started to pull the crowd in a little bit, but the crowd just in general was lackadaisical. Michael Cole mentioned multiple times that these guys are great tag team wrestlers. Not tag team sports entertainers, tag team wrestlers. There was a rumor that they were going to make The Revival the face of the tag team division. Man, they requested their release, and apparently they're giving them a shot. How wonderful and refreshing is that? Because if you could put another tag team like the Usos or like the Bar or, you know, some of the other really good tag teams that we have in the company, we could have barn burner after barn burner match, and it could be amazing.
Oh, yeah. There's certainly the talent there to have the best tag team division between both, between all three brands, or however many brands there are now in the world. But it's just a matter of allowing it to happen. And I feel like, I hate to say this, but tag team wrestling shouldn't really be that hard of a thing to write and book. It's almost been academic through all of the great years of wrestling. And then it just got convoluted into having to make strange bedfellows every now and then, or not even every now and then, at least 2 to 3 times a year. And then somehow they are able to manage to put it together and become a team and win the titles and not earning that shot. Like, hopefully this is a push in the right direction of traditional old school writing of tag team wrestling and tag team feuds and having more than one tag team feud. I don't know. Maybe I'm probably getting way ahead of things and thinking too much about it, but God damn it. The Revival are tag team champions now.
And listen, credit where credit is due. Hashtag fresh start, man. This is a different thing. They're talking about the rules more. They're enforcing them, apparently. There's some good things going on, and if they will allow them to put those kind of matches on a regular basis and put them on pay-per-views and feature them and put the Revival versus a New Day, or I know everyone I've just mentioned is on SmackDown, but giving the chance of the tag team division to do what the tag team division did on NXT, this could be incredible. Yep. So good for those guys. Much credit for, if everything went down the way we have been heard that it went down, with them requesting their release, them giving them an opportunity, then good for them for standing up for themselves. Good for the WWE for recognizing talent and giving something that they have detested for 2 generations. It seems like, yeah. It's not true. At least a generation, and giving it a shot. And crowds across the country, please don't sit on your hands. Give these guys a hand, and let's help get this whole idea over so that the guys in the back can realize it, that it's something special, and it will, quote unquote, put butts in the seat.
And you know what? Damn it all, Roode and Gable are a damn good team. Like, they work really well together, but they have suffered from the issue of being written terribly.
Like, yes,
those two guys have. I mean, we've always known that Chad Gable and pretty much Bobby Roode are talented guys, and they've been managing to put together great double team moves, work cohesively as a team when they are actually wrestling. So props to them.
Roode was an experienced tag team wrestler, right? I mean, in TNA, he was part of Beer Money and some other, you know, he's done this before. Their double teams have been great. The finish of this match was an excellent finish. Yeah. Everything about this is just kind of, everything's coming up Millhouse for the tag team division right now.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, Michael, anything to say about the Becky Lynch Charlotte thing? I know I kind of went out on a diatribe in the beginning. Anything else to say about that before we move on to SmackDown?
I hate Vince McMahon.
Touche.
Yeah. And Vince McMahon, via video package, started off SmackDown with just playing the whole thing up again, bringing Charlotte out, cutting a promo, and a pretty good promo, I would say, about all the stuff that went down.
I thought this was one of the better Charlotte Flairs that we have seen recently. She has been... Charlotte is one of those people that gets way too yelly in her promos. Way, way too yelly in her promos.
And we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
But her dad also got very yelly in his promos, too.
100%. I mean, listen, but she
should be able to distinguish herself from her father.
I completely agree. But overall, this was well done. This is how Charlotte Flair comes off best as a heel. And did you notice this, or is it just me? When you're a heel, apparently you're aware, you don't have to wear your gear everywhere you go. Because when Charlotte was a babyface, she had to wear her gear everywhere. But as a heel, she can come out not wearing her gear.
I'm going to try to pay attention more to that for other people from now on, just to see. I mean, Randy Orton wears his gear face heel all the time. He goes through TSA pre-check in his gear.
Oh, that's 100% true.
And his hoodie vest. But I'm going to have to keep an eye out for that on the heel face dynamic on street clothes versus gear.
I mean, Becky Lynch is not part of that, but I think like the top people maybe are immune to it. I'm not really quite sure how this is all working, but
because I do think that Daniel Bryan comes out in street clothes more so now that he's a heel, when as a babyface he would just have the t-shirt and his gear on.
I'm telling you, man, there's something to this thing.
Yeah. And really, SmackDown comprised of four segments throughout the entire two-hour show, because the last hour was one segment, was one match. We had the mirrored side of the women's Elimination Chamber match here with the triple threat to see who goes in first, to which it is Sonya and Mandy. They lose to Naomi and Carmella. The Iconics did not even participate in the match at all. And I love that about them. They're those opportunistic heels, and that is perfect for their characters. They beat up the good guys or the good girls after the match. I enjoyed that part of it. Once again, we had stakes to this match. That is fantastic. And I thought that we had great character development for the Iconics in it all.
Yeah, I like this. This is a good example, as we have talked about before, of having the stakes. We talked about it on Raw, and I think it's a very solid thing. It's a good step in the right direction for everybody involved in that.
Yeah. McMiz TV. How long do you think it took them to come up with that name?
34 seconds.
I even think that that's a little long for WWE. I think they would have probably gotten that done in under 20. But we got Miz and Shane McMahon hosting their own talk TV segment with the Usos. And once again, the Usos on the mic just sound like what I would think the Usos talk like in real life. Just I enjoy when they talk. Even when they sometimes sound like goofy about it.
This was kind of a cheesy promo, in my opinion.
Yeah, but it still comes across as I feel like something like when when the whole quiche thing, like, well, you talk, don't bring up our dad, like, that's kind of funny.
What I really liked was the fact that Miz was impressed by the quiche that his wife makes, and it's maybe because it's a French thing. That was pretty funny.
I didn't even think about that, but that makes perfect sense.
But that's exactly what he said. He said, "Oh, this might be a French thing."
Oh, I didn't hear him say that.
Okay. Yeah, that was very funny. I enjoyed that.
But I mean, this was what it was to build up tension between them. The Usos got the upper hand, super kicking both guys. Fine. I'm just looking forward to the McMiz blowing up like the Mega Powers, and just getting on with their eventual feud between one another.
By the way, McMiz would be an excellent chain restaurant that I would like to frequent. Maybe no, I wouldn't. What am I talking about?
I was gonna say, like, the only way I could see you going to a place like that would be after midnight. And after spending a long night of consuming adult beverages with me and our friend Ryan.
Yes, I can see that happening.
Yeah. And then the whole rest of the show comprised of this gauntlet match involving all of the men in the Elimination Chamber match for the WWE title. Mustafa Ali, unfortunately, was injured in the match last week. That caused him to be removed from the match.
Is that legit, do you know?
From what I read, it is legit. He apparently sat up when Randy was doing, you know, his stomps to all the different extremities.
Uh-huh.
And Randy booted him in the face because he accidentally, like, sat up a little bit. So that shiner under his eye, I believe, is a bit of legit, and there's, like, concussion, blah, 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 things going on there.
Well, that's a shame for him.
Yeah, it is.
That's a big opportunity for him to have to miss out on. That sucks.
Yeah. So he has been replaced by Kofi Kingston, a guy who has had some opportunities here and there in the single spotlight. I was kind of hoping for Big E, if you're going to pick a New Day participant.
It's funny. The last time they had to pick a participant in something, and I can't remember what it was. They picked Kofi again.
It was a Money in the Bank, I believe.
Okay. Yeah.
I think
and
I
know,
so.
And one of the reasons is I know why they're doing it. It's because he's a guy that can go out there and have some big spots and do all that kind of stuff. So I dig why they're doing it, but it seems strange that they wouldn't give somebody else an opportunity.
Yeah. But I mean, Kofi took this opportunity and he ran with it. He beat Daniel Bryan after a lengthy, really fun technical match. I hate seeing the champion lose a non-title match. It's WWE's MO. I'll never get over it, but it was a great match. He beat Jeff Hardy. He beat Samoa Joe. And lasted an hour in this whole thing. It got to be 2 minutes till 10, and I'm sitting there, and it's still AJ and Kofi. And I'm like, they need to, and I audibly said, they need to hurry this thing up.
They need to end this, yeah.
And my fiance's like, what do you mean? I was like, they got 2 minutes left and Randy still is supposed to be in this match. And then when AJ taps out Kofi and Randy comes out with the RKO out of nowhere, she's like, well, there it is, done quick. I'm like, you're so getting used to this. but... Randy's going to be the last guy in. Randy was the last guy in this. It seems obvious, but Kofi was the star in this. Now, was this match, like, was the same thing designed with Mustafa Ali in mind? We don't know. It would have been interesting to have seen this same exact kind of thing play out with Mustafa Ali. That would have certainly gotten that guy a shit ton of sympathy from the crowd if he didn't already have that, and would have built him up big time for this match, even though he probably wouldn't win it. That it's still gives him something. Not to say that it doesn't give anything for Kofi, but I mean, he's a guy who we've been seeing for a decade now.
Listen, it's a great thing for Kofi to be in that situation and to get that kind of featured spot. I think it's really cool, and three big wins in it. Yeah, it's a really cool little spot for him, but it's one of those deals where it is a little shocking. He's being featured in a match that he, up until that day, had nothing to do with.
Yeah. So that's the build up. That's the go home to Elimination Chamber. So let's talk about the pay-per-view. And we got, as of right now, 7 matches scheduled for this pay-per-view. And I'm sure they'll add another one at some point. That's what they tend to do. So let's go over the one that just really no one cares about right off the bat. Braun Strowman, Baron Corbin.
Yeah, this does not matter. I think you've got to go with Baron. I mean, you've got to go with Braun Strowman, right? I mean, I know that they don't care about him apparently anymore.
Baron Strowman will win.
Is that what I said?
You were about to say Baron, but you changed over.
Yeah, but I just can't see. We have been saying for a while is that they have to keep Braun strong because he was going to be one of the guys that might be able to take out Brock Lesnar. Obviously, that is not in the works. They have moved on. He is just, once again, kind of another guy out there. But I still can't see. I can't see Corbin beating him.
Can you think of a guy in somewhat recent memory, or at least off the top of your head, that has been protected as much as Braun Strowman, but when it comes to the title is just completely passed over time after time?
You know, I can't. I think if I were to think long and hard about it, maybe I could. But no, I can't right now.
I really can't either. And that it's just boggling to me that this is what we see from week to week is Braun is strong. Braun kicks people's asses. People get these hands from him. But when it comes to the title, he can't win it. And we're still made to believe that he is an unstoppable beast of a monster. It's so weird. I pick him to win too, but we are in such a weird spot with Braun Strowman right now, that I'm just perplexed.
Yeah, it's certainly strange, but there can only be so many top guys, even with two TV shows and two world titles. Apparently, he's just not one of their guys.
Yeah. Cruiserweight Championship match. Buddy Murphy defending against Akira Tozawa.
I'm interested to see where you go with this, because I think you picked Hideo Itami to win the championship from Buddy Murphy.
I did.
Last time. Because you, obviously, but now I apparently hear that Hideo's on his way out.
Yeah.
What do you think about this one?
I think they'll probably just stick with Buddy Murphy in this. And this is coming from a somewhat uneducated perspective because I don't watch 205 Live. So I'm just going with who I think kind of seems like the hot hand. And Tozawa won a fatal four-way elimination match in order to get this title shot. And that did include Cedric Alexander in that match, who is the former champion. So I guess like that's meant to mean something. But Buddy Murphy just, I feel like, is kind of the hot hand for the Cruiserweight Championship right now. So I'll just stick with him.
I think it's smart. I'm going to go with Buddy Murphy as well. I'm very high on him. I think I picked Kalisto because he was on Raw on a regular basis, which was not a smart pick for the last pay-per-view.
Really? I thought that you picked Buddy.
No, I picked Kalisto. But my rationale was that he's on Raw every week. They want to do something with somebody that's there. And to promote 205 Live. But obviously I was wrong on that. But they are very high on Buddy Murphy, and he's very good. So, yeah, I'll stick with him as well.
Okay. Our good friend Bob Lash and Leo Rush will collectively be defending the Intercontinental title against Finn Balor in a handicap match.
I feel like I do believe that this is the kind of feud that will culminate with Finn Balor winning the championship at WrestleMania.
I agree with you.
That is my belief, so I do not think that Finn Balor will win this match, and if he does, he'll win it by some kind of disqualification. Basically, Bob Lash is still the IC champion.
Yeah. I'm going to say that Bob Lash wins just because of the help from Leo Rush. And, yeah, this will culminate with Finn winning the title at Mania, probably. Shark cage for Leo Rush?
Like, let's hope not.
I feel like this is made for that, though.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Let's see. Ronda Rousey and Ruby Riott. So Ruby Riott has had the unenviable task of being the filler feud for Charlotte Flair in between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania last year, as Charlotte being the champion of SmackDown. And she has the unenviable task of doing that again this year as being the filler feud for Ronda Rousey, just on the opposite brand in between Rumble and WrestleMania. It's a shame. She's a talented, talented wrestler. But I think we know what happens here. Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, there's no way they're derailing this for Ruby Riott, unfortunately. So, not unfortunately, Ronda Rousey's supposed to have this championship. She's the right one for it right now. I just feel bad for Ruby to always be kind of just there.
Yeah, shame. Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton, Samoa Joe, Kofi Kingston, Elimination Chamber for the WWE Championship. Like, we aren't really let on very much to what we think the Mania feud for this title is. And I think that that's kind of cool. That's kind of interesting that it's not being given away so early on to us. So it makes it seem like there is a potential for a title switch here. There was, what was it, a couple of years ago with Bray winning the title in the Elimination Chamber for that god-awful Mania match that you and I had the honor of being at in person.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
So what do you see going on here?
To me, Daniel Bryan is the best heel. He might be the best heel they have in the whole company right now. He is doing an amazing job with what he's given, and he's the hot hand. Randy would be a disappointment. Samoa Joe, they'll never get behind. Kofi's just thrown in there. AJ's been done. I don't see anyone else winning this match with Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, I think that that's probably...
Oh, and Jeff Hardy is not winning this either, so, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I'll go with Daniel Bryan as well. I feel like after this, you have almost like you could play up the Jeff or the Randy Orton Mustafa Ali injury spot to turn that into a Mania feud. You could,
and I think they should.
Yeah, you could have AJ Kofi turn into a feud because of kind of the interactions through the gauntlet match. I think that would be kind of cool for Kofi to have a singles match. Mania match, especially with a guy the caliber of AJ, but then that leads you to, okay, who is Daniel Bryan going to face? And is it Jeff Hardy, Samoa Joe? They're not going to do Joe. He's another heel. So, yeah. But I do think that Daniel Bryan walks out of this with the title.
Wow, we're being really boring with this one, Mike.
Yeah, yeah. But I do think that there's one match on this card that we might be able to be different on, but we'll do that one last.
Okay.
Miz and Shane against the Usos for the SmackDown tag titles. I think that the Usos take this, and this begins the Miz-Shane breakup.
I think that's the right move. So I also agree with you on that.
And it just puts the tag titles back into real tag team developments, whatever they want to go from off of that. But here's where we have the potential to be different. The Elimination Chamber match for the first ever WWE Women's Tag Team Championship. Who gets crowned these inaugural champions? Nia Jax and Tamina, the Riot Squad, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, the Iconics, Bayley and Sasha Banks, Naomi and Carmella. Definitely not Naomi and Carmella. If that comes back and happens, fuck my life.
I'm going to go with Sasha and Bayley.
Okay. I'm going to go with Nia and Tamina. I don't want them to be, but I feel like they've been building them super strong. And this is like the complete opposite of what they do with Braun. They build him super strong and never give him the titles. But this is probably in WWE's eye a little lower on the ranks of titles here. So giving someone like Nia and Tamina the titles, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing in their mind. So yeah, I'll go with the Samoan cousins. Well, one Samoan.
I think either one of those works. I think that you get Sasha and Bayley, and you get Nia and Tamina as their first feud. And I think that if it goes the other way, it's probably the same deal. I think it's Nia and Tamina with Sasha and Bayley chasing them. So I think either one of them works. I just think that with how they've featured Sasha recently, and they still might want to do something for Horsewomen versus Four Horsewomen if they can make it happen with the rumors that Ronda's leaving, I think that keeping them strong and the story's probably better for Sasha and Bayley. That's kind of why I'm going with it. But I think Tamina and Nia is a great pick.
To clarify, because he clarified, Meltzer said he never said Ronda's leaving, but that she was going to take time off after Mania and then could probably go into a part-time role, kind of like Brock.
But it's still doing a part-time kind of role.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And let's do this just for fun. Not that it matters. Not that it will count for anything. If there's a dark horse, someone who you would think would be an off-the-wall pick to be the first ever champions here and run with something, who would you say?
Oh, it's got to be the Iconics.
Okay.
That
would be who I would say too.
Yeah, they're an actual tag team. that would be a a good pick for this title, actually.
Yeah, I would agree with that with you. I was thinking you might have said Mandy and Sonya, and I don't think that would have been a bad choice necessarily either. But
no, they're good. I still, other than the fact they were called up together and maybe they are actually friends in real life, they don't seem like a tag team to me.
Yeah.
They don't seem like they would ever hang out at all. So, yeah, I'm not, I don't think they would be the best pick for that.
Yeah. All right. So that's the only match that we differ on, right?
It is. So that will be the deciding factor, Michael.
How about, I can try to catch up to you ever so slightly, or you can pull away from me ever so slightly. So yeah, that's it for Elimination Chamber, our previews and predictions. You know what I just, I didn't just notice this. I was actually reading this earlier. If you go on Wikipedia and you look at any of WWE's pay-per-views, the way that they always start it off is kind of funny. Let me just read this first sentence that they always have for storylines. The card will include matches that result from scripted storylines where wrestlers portray heroes, villains, or less distinguishable characters in scripted events that build tension and culminate in a wrestling match or series of matches. You gotta love those less distinguishable characters.
I have often said, man, there are way too many less distinguishable characters. Now I know why, because they've got that written up and they can't change it.
Yeah. Also, was it last? No, that was, no, sorry, that was the previous week. So I just had a thought and didn't think about it. But anything else you want to add in to this before we sign off for the evening, Kevin?
I don't think so, Mike.
All right. Well, hopefully you all join us over on the Twitter where we'll be live tweeting along to Elimination Chamber or No Escape, whatever you want to call it.
Or the Elimination Chamber, which I also would really enjoy.
It's Porky Pig's favorite pay-per-view of the year. Join us on Twitter at Miss Spots, where we'll be doing that and having fun. Also, we typically do that during Raw and SmackDown as well. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. You can listen to this podcast in one of many different wonderful fashions, whichever suits your needs, such as our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com, or simply MissSpots.com. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, TuneIn, Podcast Addict, Google Podcasts, any of those great services to where you can subscribe to the show and get them delivered to the device of your choice every Thursday free of charge. We're also on Geek Life Radio every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central at geeklifradio.com. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll catch you guys next week. Good night. Good wrestling.